Now, what does the verse really speaks about, and what is the context? That's what we need to look at it. First of all, what is the historical context? Again, that appeared in the same surah, 9, one of these two surahs about that conflict with pagan Arabs. If you read even the remaining part of the verse, okay, it says, فَاقْتُلُوا الْمُشْرِكِينَ حَيْثُ وَجَدْتُمُوهُمْ وَخُذُوهُمْ وَاحْصُرُوهُمْ وَاقْعُدُوا لَهُمْ كُلَّ مَرْصَدٍ فَإِنْ تَابُوا وَأَقَامُوا الصَّلَاةَ وَآتَوُوا الزَّكَاةَ فَخَلُّوا سَبِيلَهُمْ. That if they desist from the wrong, especially of course if they are guided and they stop their hostilities, guided to Islam, it says, leave them alone. So if the command really was to kill them because they are unbelievers, then there should be no chance given to them, because if they stop, then leave them alone. But that's not all. Historically, about whom does this apply? About Jews, Christian, and everybody who is not a Muslim? Or does it deal specifically in historical context with the pagan Arabs who tortured Muslims? And as you know, Muslims were tortured to death, like the father of Ammar ibn Yasir, like Sumayya, the mother of Ammar. Muslims were tortured even to death. They were exiled from Mecca. They were fought against in wave after wave. And whenever there were treaties with them, like the Treaty of Hudaybiyah, they were the ones who broke the treaty and killed the allies of Muslims. So when you get into the battlefield for people who betrayed and killed and tortured, and the Quran says, kill them wherever you find them, does it mean kill every other person or kill the aggressors who are carrying arms against you in the battlefield? Not only the rest of the verse, but I urge you, go, there is nothing hidden. Go and get any translation, even of the meaning of the Quran. And put it not in the context of one verse, the context of the section, as I said earlier. And the relevant section here is the verses before and after from the beginning of the surah. I do not wish to spend too much time on that, because you can take lots of analysis in that, but basically, that context speaks about people who started aggressive or hostilities against you. وَهُمْ بَدَأُوكُمْ أَوَّلَ مَرَّةٍ. They are the ones who started aggression and persecution against you in the first place. Even in the middle of these very strong verses about the warfare, in the middle of that, it speaks about non-Muslims who did not betray their treaty with Muslims, and say for these people, complete their term for them. The same section speaks about those who betrayed their treaty, and it says, if they have power over you, if they prevail over you, they will never even consider any bonds, familial bonds, when they persecute or kill you. Just read it, you find lots of indication that it is quite specific and not even generalized. Even in the middle of all these verses, one of the most noble things in the Quran, it says, if one of the unbelievers, mean those who, not anyone, the one who's fighting, min al-mushrikeen, the Arab pagans, istajaraka fa'ajir, seek your protection, even in the battlefield. And he says, all right, I seek your protection. You should give him protection. You know why? The Quran says, so that he may have an opportunity to listen to the word of Allah. So if the purpose is to cut as many heads as possible, kill and destroy, then there's no need, because he's still unbeliever. But even the slightest sign of peacefulness, of readiness to communicate, it says you should take him to a safe place. You never take advantage of that. What could be more noble, even in verses dealing with war? One following things that I'd like to add here also is that if indeed that logic has any foundation whatsoever in the totality of the Quranic context, not just the verse or section, then it doesn't have any meaning at all, because it runs squarely against various places in the Quran, including that famous one, let be no compulsion in religion. You don't kill someone because of not accepting Islam. That's why Ibn Taymiyyah, rahimahullah, the great scholar of Islam, he discussed that issue. Is the fight against those unbelievers because of their lack of faith or refusal to accept Islam, or بِسَبَبِ عُدْوَانِهِمْ, or because of their aggression? And he concluded that it is because of aggression. Ibn Taymiyyah did not come up with that from his own mind, and inshallah I'll show you as we go on a specific indication in the Quran that the purpose or the reason for fighting is not their disbelief in Islam, but because of their aggression. There is one more point before moving to the next one. Some people say, those verses in the Quran that speak about courteous dialogue and cordial relationship with non-Muslims has all been abrogated by what they call the verse of the sword, by that verse in chapter 9. There is no evidence from the Quran that this has been abrogating other verses. And while some scholars, and that's why I said earlier, don't quote me as scholars, scholars could be wrong also, more discerning scholars rejected this idea that some writers in the past said that this verse precluded all the other verses. It is totally erroneous, and there is no evidence. And it is well known in the methodology of usul, that's known the methodology of Islamic law, that something that is definitive cannot be rejected on the basis of something which is probabilistic. The Quran is clear, muhkam. The verses in the Quran that speak about good treatment of non-Muslims in spite of the rejection of Islam are numerous and clear-cut. For someone to make a claim that one verse abrogated all of that, that's an opinion, and an opinion cannot supersede the clear text of the Quran. You follow? Cannot, by a mere claim like this. And the proper understanding, as many discerning scholars have found out, that there is no abrogation here. The verse about the sword is applicable in a situation when people are trying to finish you off, to destroy you. Yes, you can fight them. And the verses about inviting people, as the Quran says, in wisdom and beautiful exhortation, applied in the past, and apply today, and will apply tomorrow for anyone who's peacefully communicating with Muslims without compulsion. So each verse has its own scope of application, not that one abrogated or replaced the other. This is a myth, common as it may be, it's a myth. 7. Muslims are required to fight all non-Muslims until they accept Islam. And again, to familiarize you, those who know Arabic, they refer to two ayahs in the Quran that use the term وَيَكُونَ الدِّينُ لِلَّهِ, fight them until there is no more fitna, or I'll come to that word, or persecution, and religion belong to Allah. And another ayah in Surah 8, Al-Anfal, which uses the term even stronger, وَيَكُونَ الدِّينُ كُلُّهُ لِلَّهِ, and all religion belongs to Allah. And you know how some people interpret that to mean? That religion belongs to Allah, that means Islam becomes the only religion, dominates over all. Is that interpretation correct? Let's go back to the words used in this verse. وَقَاتِلُوهُمْ حَتَّى لَا تَكُونَ فِتْنَةً. That appears in Surah 2 in verse 193. The word fitna here means religious persecution. That means fight those aggressive people until there is no more religious persecution. And historically we know it. They used to punish people even who remained back in Mecca if they discovered that they accepted Islam and harassed them. So يَكُونَ الدِّينُ لِلَّهِ does not mean Islam is imposed on everyone else, but it means that people have the freedom, religion belongs to God, not to the rules and dictates of rulers, and people can choose a religion, whether it's Islam or otherwise. But there is even another aspect to keep the consistency of the methodology we mentioned earlier. What is the context of the Quran? The context is freedom to choose a religion, no compulsion in religion. How come the Quran says no compulsion and then says fight them until there's only Islam? What sense does that make? All right. Moving on. Continuing with this seventh issue. Sometimes I get too slow, and then when I press it,